Hey contractors, on December 16th, you're invited to a web class that will take the unpredictability out of your business growth. You see, since 2015, we've tracked the growth of over 1,900 businesses just like yours in one of the longest running analysis of successful contractors in North America. We had unrestricted access to their financials, their operations, their management decisions, their personal habits, and all their biases. And we did this for about 30 months per member that we worked with. And we uncovered six, I would say, pretty unexpected patterns shared by the most profitable 7-, 8-, and 9-figure contractors. Tune in on December 16th to discover our findings and learn how to scale up your business without working more. Click the link in the description, and I'll see you there. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. Do you ever feel like there's like way too much to learn and sometimes even feel guilty for not learning enough? Financial literacy, AI, automation software, job site best practices, leadership theory, the list of things you could go out and understand are arguably endless. And what if I told you the answer is actually to learn less? Our guest today is Pat Flynn, entrepreneur and podcast host and author of several books, including Superfans and Will It Fly? In his newest book, Lean Learning, Pat lays out a tangible framework for spending less time on the right things. It's all about figuring out what you actually need to learn and when you need to learn it, and arguably what you don't need to learn at all. If you're ready to stop overanalyzing and start executing, this one's going to hit home. Now, let's get into it with Pat Flynn. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Pat Flynn, welcome to the show.
Yo, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm stoked to have you. I have read through your book, Lean Learning, and it made me laugh along the way.
Made you laugh. Well, hopefully in a good way.
It was the concept of just like, we're consuming too much. You need to consume less and focus on what's truly important. And it made me laugh because I run an education company and I see how much people actually will take in versus how much they actually use of that in their business day to day. And I am a big believer in that. So stoked to get into this conversation. Let's start with this whole idea, but like, why is overlearning hurting small business?
I mean, it's hurting all of us. I see it in my kids. I see it from my business students, and I had seen it in myself for so long. Because when you're learning, you're not taking action. But when you're learning, it feels like you're making progress. But with so much information coming at us these days, we're just slowing down. And not only are we slowing down, we're becoming obese with info, right? We're treating information like it's still scarce. Back in the day, information was a valuable thing because not everybody had it, right? If you bought the Encyclopedia Britannica and had the rows of encyclopedias in your house, you were seen as smarter because you could afford it. But now we all have access to literally the same information on our phones. And not only that, we're getting force-fed. So we're at this like buffet line and we're stuffing our plates full because we still treat it like it's a scarce food source, right? Almost like back in the day, caveman days, you find a food source, you scarf it down, right? You hoard it because you might not come across anymore. But we're at this buffet line now. And you know this, when you go on YouTube and you start searching for anything, the next time you log into YouTube, you're getting force-fed more and just more and more. And that, there's a lot of parallels between consuming food and the words we use there and consuming information, right? Digesting information, digesting food, consuming info, consuming food. And nobody is in a position now because we're just so overloaded to position ourselves for the best sort of course forward. We have to learn how to navigate the world out there. And plus now AI is here, things are just moving even faster. And so there's this concept that's in the book about trading what we call just in case learning, which is what we all do because mm-hmm. we feel like we need more info just in case, for just in time learning. Knowing what your next step is, finding the right resource from the right places for just that, and trusting that by the time you get to the next step, that there will be resources there. And not only will there be resources there, but they're going to be the most updated, more relevant resources by the time you need them. But we're fighting a lot of internal factors like FOMO and just like what everybody else is doing. And just there's so much good stuff out there, but we don't need it all right now. We need to take more action over consuming information.
Thank you for writing about this, because I'll even say personally, there's always somebody saying, Danny, you got to read this book. Danny, you got to check this out. And I feel guilty if I don't. And right, sometimes right. I'm even just like looking into it just because I said I would. And I'm like, man, is this actually what I need to know right now? Because I don't know. Like like to your point, there's just too much information out there. I really only have so much capacity. I'm not just a business owner. I'm also a father. I've got other things in my life.
Yeah.
And there's, maybe one thing a month that my brain can take in and actually do something with max. But yet there's like 400 things a day that I'm interacting with, let alone all the recommendations coming in. So,
right. I mean, some of it we can't help because we just live in this world. And so we have to discipline ourselves with what's coming in. Yeah. But we also have to be disciplined about what we let in, that we do have control. For example, I know in the car for years, it was like you have to have a podcast or an audiobook playing or else you're wasting your time, right? Why would you not drive and learn at the same time? Well, because I talk about this in the book, we can get over inspired. We can be pulled in all these different directions from all the intake, right? So if you read this book that your friend recommended, it's like, okay, now I have this new idea, even though I already committed and said yes to this one. And now you're getting all these different opinions and all these different thoughts coming in. It's exactly why we have what we call shower thoughts. If you're in the shower, you literally have nothing else to do but think because you can't consume. You've already consumed. You're now able to digest and understand and sort of have these creative thoughts around the things you've already consumed. And so here's what I do in the car now. I don't drive with anything. I don't even drive with music. I drive in silence, which is weird because number one, I hear parts of the car that I've never heard before. And I'm like, is that okay? But number two, I'm able to now think more creatively, more deeply about the things that have already inserted themselves into my brain. And I've often had my best, most important moments in those moments in the car in silence. It's very strange, but it's what you should do. And just try it. Try driving to work next time in silence and see where your brain goes. It starts to think more deeply about things and we don't give ourselves a chance to do that anymore.
It has time to connect patterns and see unrelated ideas come together as one idea and you're like, right. And that has to be unique to you. Yeah. Yep. So I'll just give you a quick story. So when I realized I probably need to slow down on this, there was a men's group that we used to meet on Fridays and they were doing a book study on, I think it was time management or something like that. And so I was listening to it on 2x speed while going to the meeting, realizing like this is going nowhere. And anyway, to call my own self out on this, it's since then I have slowed down on just if somebody recommends something to me, I might write it down, but very seldomly will I take it in.
I mean, a part of this is knowing what you want though as well. If you don't have priorities or don't know what your goals are, then you're going to be more open to consuming so much to try to find yourself. And that's the wrong way to go about it. You need to know where you want to go and what your goals are and only allow learning to happen about that thing and that thing only. Everything else could be put aside for later. And a strategy that I often recommend my students is if you come across something on your table that isn't for you right now, put it away in a folder, or Notion, or wherever you might be able to organize that. And what's really funny is 99% of the time, you'll never go back to it anyway. Because by the time you might need it, there's better and more relevant information that has come out since. It's just simply a method to move forward and finally take action.
Hey guys, quick question before we continue the episode. If you could get a custom roadmap for growing your business in 5 minutes, would it be worth your time? After tracking the growth of over 1,900 contracting businesses since 2015, we've put together a 5-minute quiz you can go take right now that draws on a massive pool of data. You'll get instant access to a personalized report that's going to tell you which one of the four phases of contractor growth you're actually in right now. How your company stacks up in the 6 core areas of business compared with industry benchmarks. And what to go do next, including customized resources, tools, and templates you'll have access to right away. No waiting around for an email or filling out a million separate forms. The link is in the description, so go check it out. Now, back to the episode. Now, you wrote about this, and I think there's a lot of things around strategic planning that people talk about, but the first thing you write out in your book is picking what's truly important and using something called the inspiration matrix. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, so if you think of like 4 quadrants, you know, there's different parts of our life that require different things. And the first one on the upper left being sort of things that are really interesting and exciting to you, but maybe less important per se, is sort of like your recreational things. And I think when I speak to at least a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs, and I know that is many, if not most of your listeners, there's nothing in this space. And that's dangerous. That means there's stuff that's always on your mind that is like life or death seemingly. And so there's nothing to take a break with. And for me, it's largely fishing, gardening, things outside of the house. I have 1 or 2 things in there max at a time. When you start to see people with too many of those, it's like, okay, well, we're also not focused here either. So having something in your sort of recreational inspiration spot for something that might be quote unquote less life or death, but more exciting we need that in our lives. And it's really important to take that space. I have a friend of mine who had burnt out because of business. I mean, he literally was hospitalized because of, I think it was low, he had low something as a result of just all the stress he was doing. I can't remember exactly, but he had put himself in the hospital.
Too much cortisol.
And then when he got out, he's like, you know what? I need to take some breaks and I need something to just release. Pay attention to that's not my business. And it became bonsai trees. Like he became like an old man instantly when he started doing that. But it's given him some space and breathing room so that when he comes back into the business or the other parts of his life that matter, that are important, he's just refreshed. And I think that that's really key. The sort of less important and less exciting stuff I like to call junk sparks, because we get excited about them for a hot minute and it pulls us away from our other responsibilities. This is sort of the lower left quadrant, if you want to call it that. And I call them junk sparks. They give us a moment of interest and then pull us away from the other things that are important. And where I find many, at least my students who are starting their businesses and careers, this is the one that's filled out the most. They started this project, but it's only half done. And they like started this project that never got off the ground. And there's like five or six different things in there. And it's like, there's no way that you could have focus if you are also allowing all of these other things to come in. It's also where you can get most of your time back. Let's say no to these things so that we can recommit to the things that we've said yes to. Now, your passion pursuits, which are the things that are really important and really exciting to you, that's kind of where you want to live. And having one of those things at a time, and not just saying one and done only, but one at a time as you create them or have them in your life, that's kind of the magical formula. And this is a thing that is exciting, but also challenging, but something that you would continue to do and get up for anyway, and something that lights you up, your passion pursuits. And then you have, of course, the things that you need to do that you just hate, but you have to do them anyway. It's important to recognize those as well, the sort of mandatory things in that matrix that, okay, you just have to be aware that they're there, and you know, you have to do what you have to do sometimes. But having some sort of balance for you and the life that you want to live is really important. So the first exercise in the book is to kind of do an audit on yourself on where are you spending most of your time? Where is your interest? And so you can start to immediately get some time back and start to refocus that effort into where it can get you the most results.
When it comes to passion pursuits, how does somebody acknowledge this is a true passion pursuit versus just a really exciting idea in the moment that doesn't actually lead anywhere long term?
Yeah, the first step is to actually participate in it and just kind of see what happens. It's easy to just go, okay, well, I have a bunch of these ideas. You want to give yourself what I like to call like little micro experiments or tiny experiments, as another author, Anne LaCouffe, would say. If you're like, okay, this could be a passion pursuit, but how do I know? Well, have it become a thing that's important to you and something that you think about all the time for a period of time, like 30 days or 60 days. So you can actually inject it into your normal life and see if it becomes something that you want to continue to get up for even after that. And for a lot of times you get past those 30 days and you're like, oh, okay, I did it. I participated and I went to the pickleball tournament every single weekend. And I was just like, you know what? Like, it was fun. And you know, now I'm going to reallocate this because it's not really something that I think is going to become a passion of mine that I want to like put more effort into, but you gave it a shot. And I think that's the other important lesson here is let's like remove the guesswork with a lot of this stuff. Let's actually try these things, contain those interests in a container of time so that you can actually test whether or not it's something you want to keep moving forward with. And a lot of times it's based on a feeling you have as well. The unquantifiable thing that tells your gut, then you start to get like butterflies related to this thing sometimes. Sometimes it is that thing. And this is where getting involved with other people in these spaces can really start to bring out whether or not this is something you want to continue with, because it's not just about the action or the thing you're doing, but it's who you're doing it with. And that's why surrounding yourself with partners and collaborators and peers within those spaces can be key to helping you understand whether or not you want to stay there or not, and also can find inspiration and motivation and even information from other people who are doing that with you.
Yeah, I find for me, there's like in business anyways, it's kind of like, I have an idea, you know, and you get inspired by something and you just want nothing more than to tell your team. And what I've had to do over time is just not tell them, actually, because they get super disgruntled every time I go to them on this.
Same.
Write down a list of all that stuff, just like you're describing. So it goes somewhere, because if I don't put it somewhere, that's like the biggest fear is it's like, I don't want this idea to go away. Write it down somewhere and let it sit. And like you said, let it sit maybe a month and see if it comes back. So my whiteboard is full of ideas. And out of that, it is interesting because quite a few of those things a month later seem less exciting, less relevant. And there's only a couple that actually make it through that filter. So
for sure. And the tough part today with that method, and that is the right method, is if I don't act on this now, it's going to be a lost opportunity, right? Yeah. It's that FOMO. But the truth is, you probably said that about other things you've already said yes to. And when you say yes to this new thing, what no are you saying? What are you saying no to? So it's really important to give yourself some time to really assess. And this is where you can have conversations about these things with your team before they're actually decisions made. You can't often read the label when you are inside the bottle. So you need to see from the outside, from other people's perspectives, like what this might actually look like. I know specifically for businesses, it's like, I have this idea and I know what that means for me, but what does that mean for everybody else that may be involved with this? What new things will now come up as on their plate? And is that worth their time and effort as well? Let's have an opportunity to think about this. On our team, what we do when we have these ideas is we actually have what we call divergent thinking sessions and convergent thinking sessions. So when we meet, like for example, next month, we're meeting all together in Temecula, California to have our little, offsite. We have literally on the calendar moments for us to just together as a team, everybody on that team brainstorm. Everybody's ideas are worth it. So we have what we call divergent thinking. From where we are now, what new things can we potentially add in here? Let's collect all of that now in this moment. Let's have that part of the brain come out. We just have all ideas on the table, post-it notes everywhere, and that's okay. And then we start talking about these things. We start getting ideas. We start taking things off of the whiteboard. We start putting new things on. And then we have lunch. And then the second half of the day, we go into what we call convergence, which is let's take all these new things and let's actually see what they might look like if we were to converge on one or two of them. And let's all come up with it together. And this is how we've come up with some of our best ideas in my educational company for businesses to teach entrepreneurship and what courses to land on, what teachings we should do and which ones we shouldn't. Having that freedom to diverge and then the discipline to then converge has been really, really good rhythm for us, as opposed to let's just be divergent this whole time and come up with a bunch of ideas and really not make a decision about them, or stay so funneled on what we're doing now that we don't give new things an opportunity to come in if they could potentially be valuable or not.
I feel that the fight that I see with a lot of our members, and me included, is this thing we call entrepreneur ADD. It's just like, we've got another darn distraction is kind of what it stands for. And it's just that what you just described is simple and effective. It's bringing it together in one meeting with an agenda, where at the end of that meeting, we're going to start, like you just said, with all things on the table, and we're going to start down to one simple idea. I find a lot of people, the entrepreneur often feels they have to do that themselves. And what you're saying is involve your team in that whole process. So thank you.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Because then you get the backing of other people who are excited. And, you know, I know a lot of people who are maybe in lower positions in a company might not feel recognition. This is an opportunity for them to feel like their voice matters and that everybody's kind of in this for the collective whole. Now, ultimately, you as the CEO have to make that decision. And that might mean saying no to some people's ideas. But as long as you approach that and position it as, this is a way for all of us to get all the ideas on the table, I'm still going to make the final decision, but I want to hear your voices. I want to hear your thoughts about all these things. And as long as we not agree to disagree, that's what the wrong thinking, right? Because that means we're still mad at each other. And I kind of want you to fail for agreeing to disagree. Like, I want my idea
this
to be better.
Very passive aggressive statement.
Right. That's not a great way to approach a company, especially let alone relationships. It's disagree, but commit. Mm-hmm. You might disagree with me, but commit to the decision I make, because that's my role as a CEO. And then we can determine whether or not this works or not. And then I will have to assess whether or not that was a good decision. And there we go. But as long as we're on the same page, and even though you might not agree with me, you will commit to the decision I make because that's the position I'm in. Then great. We all trust each other. Let's do this.
So we've got the idea. We've got the passion pursuit. We've decided where we're going. There's a few other keys in your book, but there's one that we mentioned earlier I want to get back into, which is just in time versus just in case. Can you unpack this and just help everybody listening just how to decide what is just in time stuff versus the just in case stuff that might need to be cut out?
Yeah, I struggle with this a lot because I was in the condition. I was conditioned growing up with education just to learn all the things before taking any action. And as a result of that, I always overwhelmed myself. I remember when I first wrote my story is I started an architecture company, a company helping architects pass an exam when I got laid off in 2008. And I was writing my notes online. I got found in Google keywords. People started to find me. And then I was told I should write an ebook to serve this audience, put all my notes together in a study guide, a PDF file. Again, it just was so overwhelming because I started to research it. I was like, okay, I have to write this book, but then I have to come up with a cover. Then I have to know how to format this thing and even sell it online. I've never done that before. It was all overwhelming when I learned about the entire thing. So what I knew, however, was I knew I needed to write the thing, or else none of that stuff forward down the stream was going to matter. So I just pulled out Microsoft Word. There's a question that guides us in this entire process, which is, if this were easy, what would it look like? That should be your guiding question throughout everything, and it removes a lot of the complications. So if this were easy, what would it look like? Well, I would just use Microsoft Word, because that's what I always use to write things like essays and stuff when I was a kid. So I'm just going to open up Microsoft Word and write the study guide. So I did. In about 2.5 weeks, I had 76 pages of all my notes into this guide, and it was just a really giant long essay because I didn't know how to format. But I didn't need to know how to format it. I just needed everything on there. And then I went and said, okay, next step, what do I need to learn? I need to learn how to format this stuff that I just wrote. And so I went to, I think it was YouTube or some other video resource. It could have been Vimeo or something at the time, where there was just a 20-minute video on how to do that. And I did it. I did it within a day. I formatted everything because that was my focus. I only needed to know that right at that time. And then I said, okay, now I need to create a cover. I don't know how to do this. Well, I found a video, did the same thing. Now I need to know how to sell it online. Well, I'd never posted or published anything online before. What do? I met a friend who was in a mastermind group I was in, again, the importance of peers who have done these things before as well, in connection to them, who said, Pat, there's this tool called eJunkie where you can put your PDF file and then you'll get a button that you can put on your website. And that's it. And I said, really? It's that simple? He gave me the link and that's it. eJunkie doesn't exist anymore, but there's a lot of tools like that that can do that now, like Kit or Gumroad or Stan or any of these stores. Like they can help you do the same thing now. So that was very quick. I did that in a half a day. I had my button on my website, but I was missing one thing. I was missing copy, a sales page. I'd never written sales copy before. So I went to old habits. I immediately started going and researching, okay, what would it take to be a copywriter? And I found all these schools and all these programs and all these other things that were going to cost thousands of dollars. And I just started to question, okay, I'm never going to do this. Like nobody's ever going to buy this thing because I don't know how to write copy. But I went to a friend who said, Pat, I know a resource. There's a book called Moonlighting on the Internet. And it's like a book about how to sell things on eBay, how to sell like a whole bunch of different methods to make money online. And he said, don't even read the book. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, at the end of the book, there's an appendix. And in that appendix, there is a sales page that you can basically just plug and play Mad Lib style your own product. And I said, okay, cool. So I got the book, copied that sales page, put in my own product features and benefits, sold it. And that sales page was used for 10 years to sell over $1.5 million worth of that PDF file over the years. That website's still up, by the way, today at greenexamacademy.com, and still generates passive income now almost 20 years later. We just are an affiliate for a different product now versus having my own. But that's just in time learning. I only learned what I needed to know at the time, so that I didn't A, overwhelm myself. B, once I had that book, I had momentum going already. I already had progress. There was no way I was not going to continue because I had the starting artifact already. And again, the big struggle many people make is, well, I need to learn it all or else I might make a mistake. But the fun factor about this is, and many times those mistakes are going to be the, a lot of people think mistakes will derail you, but they become the guide rails now that you can now work within. And that's the big thing. So long as you're like trying to do brain surgery. And that being said, you think about the first brain surgeons back in the day, they probably made some mistakes, but that's how we learn. Now, I'm not saying, you know, cut open some skulls, but for the most part, most of the things we're doing, you can benefit more by just doing and hitting publish or taking action, as opposed to consuming everything and overwhelming yourself and confusing everything.
I feel like what you're speaking against is just like, stop having paralysis by analysis. If I was to sum it up, it's that old statement of like, if somebody's overthinking and overdoing something. The thing I think about too, though, is I'm like, okay, so I'm going to just trust in the process.
Yep.
You also sounded like, I found this friend and then it just happened. And then like, what if you have a problem with that? What if it's just like, I don't know that, like, do you need to at least know the steps you're going to take along the way? Or are you just focused on the first part?
Because there are people who have taken those steps before who can tell you what they are when you need them.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to YouTube, you could probably find people teaching that step. Or, you know, the best thing to do would be find like a person who is your kind of mentor. I mean, they have you here for this and for a lot of the components that you teach about. So great. Don't worry about what anybody else is saying. Follow the strategies here at Contractor Evolution and then you'll be good. And if there's questions, then they'll come to you because you are their mentor, or other members of this group are each other's mentor. And so that's why it's important to understand that you can't be in a silo doing this. You have to be out there, not just researching, but finding the right people who can guide you, whether that means you have to pay for that mentorship or you get to become an intern or whatever that might be. That's the secret. Again, it's funny how your immediate rebuttal was, well, how do I know what to do? You're already like doubting, right? And that's very common. So you kind of have to swim in the deep end. And the cool thing is there's people who have already done these things who can guide you along the way. And then if it's like, well, I don't have anybody in this space, I don't have any knowledge of any networks or where these people exist. Well, now you know what your next priority is. And that's what you focus on.
That is the next step.
Right? So like there's always a next step, even if you don't know all the next steps.
This was another principle you wrote in the book, which was the power of champions and finding community. Is there any just best practices when somebody's looking for the right community? I mean, I am a community, Breakthrough Academy, contract. We are our own community, but we fit a certain niche and we fit a very specific client. If someone's out there looking, like, how do they find that right space to be in the right place? So they're not with a bunch of people that are they're way ahead of, or they're not with a bunch of people that they're way behind. And it's like they're just not able to contribute to the conversation. They're just, how do you find that community?
You just search for it. I mean, you could search on Facebook, LinkedIn, you could search on Google and not worry about being in the right room or not right away. You won't know until you're in there.
Yeah.
So just get involved is really the key word, and just put yourself where those people are. I mean, the number one way to do this, a lot of people ask me the question, Pat, if you had $1,000 and you had to start all over today, what would you do? I would spend money on a plane ticket and an event and just be where those people are who I want to serve.
Just get out of the office.
And just surround myself around.
Get out of the office. You know what I
mean? Yeah. Get out of the office, go to where those people are and just ask. Get curious. That's the way to do it. And just ask around and see who's there and see what other companies are there paying for sponsorships and the kinds of things that they're offering. Try to find the peers that are just starting out too. Try to find those that are ahead on stage and what are they teaching, and just kind of put myself in that world to see where I might be able to plant my flag.
There are those listening that are like, yeah, of course, get out of the office, go to the events. They go to them all the time. I know who these people are and they love going to events. But then there's the opposite, who are like, it's like pulling teeth to get them to go out to one event, to go and meet other people. And they're, anyways, I would just say,
they're not going to fall on your lap. That's for sure. I mean, you got to go out there. You have to,
yeah.
Trust me, I'm an introvert as well.
Yeah.
So I understand how hard that can be, how little you can feel in those spaces, but the opportunity that is there so far outweighs the risk of going. Absolutely. And what I've learned, and if I could go back into time and tell myself, I'd ask myself, my younger self, my shy younger self, to just meet as many people as you can, because you never know, that next person you meet could be the puzzle piece that's been missing this whole time one way or another. It's all about relationships. I mean, I know you know this, and I know this. Every amazing thing that has happened in my career has been a result of other people that have been in some way, shape, or form a part of that. Nothing ever happens alone. So you kind of have to get out of that bubble and go into those situations. And for me, when I go to events, I know that how hard it is for me to go out there and talk to people. And just even if you don't talk to people, just being around that environment can help. But do give yourself an opportunity to meet and understand that there's probably people who are just as scared to chat with people as you are. And so they're going to be thankful that you step up and say hello. And then for me, when I go to an event, I have to spend a couple hours in the hotel and sort of like recharge, because people take energy from me. And that's not a bad thing. That's just who I am as an introvert. And then I go back out there and do it, because I know that the benefits far outweigh the cons.
Cool. Another key you talk about in your book is voluntary forcing functions. And I imagine this is kind of, you're going down this path that you've never been down before, and you're kind of going to a stage you've never been before. Can you speak to this a little bit? Voluntary forcing functions?
Yeah. So a force function is something that in a way forces you to do the thing that maybe you're scared to do or don't want to do, but you know you should do. Doing that voluntarily is what I'm asking in this book. So a regular force function, or one that is forced upon you, was like when I got laid off. I was forced to be an entrepreneur and to figure my way into this. If I didn't get laid off, I'm guaranteeing that I wouldn't have gone down this path. But oh my gosh, I'm so grateful for that. But doing this voluntarily is what can help you do the things you want to do. For example, I wanted to learn how to be a public speaker. I always knew that was going to be good for me as an entrepreneur and somebody who wanted to build a following. It would separate me from the competition and the others that were in my space. But I was so deathly afraid of it. I said no to every opportunity in the beginning. Even though I had a growing podcast, one of the top business podcasts in the world at the time, I said no because I was so scared of it, even though I knew internally that this would be good for me. But I understood the power of a voluntary force function. So I signed up for my first talk because my friend Philip, who was starting an event called FinCon, Financial Blogger Conference, he was running a show and he needed speakers. And I was like, I volunteer as tribute. And as soon as I volunteered as tribute, all those rush of like being scared and being sweaty and scary, oh my gosh, like what's happening? But I also took action that I never took before. I followed the process of this. If this were easy, what would it look like? And just in time learning and found a resource called Stand and Deliver by Dale Carnegie, an amazing book. If you're learning how to be a public speaker, that's where I would start. Even though there were a million resources out there, I went to a couple speaker friends and they both recommended that book. So that's where I started. And I was able to, knowing there was a date coming and that I didn't want to embarrass myself on stage, put together a decent deck that would allow me to provide value. And even though it wasn't perfect, I got up on stage and I did it. And that started my public speaking career. And now I've spoken in front of over 350 different audiences and I've earned about $2 million in speaking fees since then. Again, something that I was deathly afraid of doing simply because I forced myself to do it and I had a date. Every good voluntary force function has sort of like a date when something happens. This reminds me of there was a show on Apple TV that was run by Tim Ferriss a number of years back where he was sort of like showing off how he learned things quickly. And it was by doing exactly this. For example, one of the episodes, he was wanting to learn how to speak Tagalog, which is the Filipino national language. Okay. There's many dialects, but that's the main one. And to learn, he had set up an interview at a Filipino news station like in a month's time from the moment he decided to learn this. So he had a date, a moment where something was going to happen where he had to learn enough to be able to have this conversation. He also forced himself by learning Tagalog by moving in with a Filipino family that would only speak Tagalog while he was there. And, you know, he couldn't learn the entire language, but he learned enough to have a conversation because he was in that situation at his home that he lived in, and he was able to do it. That's, you know, if you've ever tried to learn another language, you know that there's things like Duolingo and flashcards and those kinds of things, but nothing can teach you better than going to that country and literally having the person speak to you in that language behind the counter, and you have no idea what to say and you're failing, but you learn pretty quickly because you're literally in that moment and forced to do so, right? That's how I learned a little bit of Japanese, by going to Japan, and you know, I'm there because of Pokemon related things, but I was able to pick up so much more much faster because it was internalized in real life versus flashcards and things where it's just like, that's not how we learn. We learn by doing. And this force function is a great way to do it.
As an entrepreneur, I think most people listening would resonate well with this. Like, we constantly put ourselves in uncomfortable situations, and sometimes they are forced on us, actually, more than anything. And what I've noticed is as I've gotten older, I have volunteered less for that. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like when I was younger, I was kind of like, sure, let's go. And then you get a little burned a few times and you realize you didn't quite do it well. And then that creates, I guess, what we would call like a limiting belief. And then you get stuck in that and then you stop volunteering. And so what you're saying is, yes, forcing functions will come your way as an entrepreneur, but pick some to volunteer for so that you can actually get yourself back out there and not create a little cocoon for yourself.
What it is, it's placing a bet.
Yeah.
You're placing a bet. And like you said, a lot of us entrepreneurs who've been in this for a while, we're not placing bets anymore. Mm-hmm. We're just kind of playing it safe. We're holding our chips and maybe the big blind is coming around every once in a while and still just taking our chips slowly and slowly and slowly from us. But in order to see progress, you kind of have to play some bets every once in a while. And hopefully they're smart bets. You're not just kind of like throwing your money around. But this idea of something risky, with risk comes reward. And of course you want it to be controlled, but with this idea of the actions that you could take rather than the money that you can spend for a bet, it is just as important and just as fruitful when these things do pan out. I think a lot of us fall into complacency for sure.
Yeah. I've always been a big proponent of just like, I call it calculated risk versus blind risk. And so I will always sit and just try and, sounds terrible. Maybe this is counterintuitive to what you teach, but it's like, I try and give some percentage of likelihood. I'm like, this is a 42%. And I'm like kind of guesstimating, but I'm like looking at it, I'm like, that's roughly, and am I okay with that? Okay. And am I okay with worst case scenario too, actually, is a big one I think through. And then if I'm okay with both, we can move forward. But I will give it some element of thought, because the opposite is true too, where I see some people like, we're going to 10X the business next year. And I'm like, do you understand what's involved in doing that? And like, you haven't really thought it through. So what element, how much do you think we should think through these next big stages we've never been through versus just going for it? And where's the balance?
I mean, it's important to think through. I mean, you don't want to, you're not taking risks blindly, mm-hmm. like you said. I think it's important to go into this with some knowledge of what you're hoping to see and what this could potentially do for you and the outcomes of that. And if you go through the exercise of, well, even if this does work, we're not really that much further ahead, then why are we doing it? Mm-hmm. Right. So I think just the thought experiment alone could be really helpful. It's funny you mentioned 10X, because Ben Hardy wrote a book called 10X is easier than 2X. And that's an interesting conversation in and of itself, because when you're trying to double your whatever it is, your revenue, your output, whatever it might be, you kind of just feel like you have to do more of the same thing, mm-hmm. right? Either longer or harder or whatever it might be. You just put more into it because you just want twice as much kind of coming back in return. But in order to 10X something, you cannot just do the same things you're doing. And that's kind of the premise of the book. You have to completely reinvent certain things that maybe are in your business to be able to 10X. You can't just do the same thing more. And a lot of this is important conversation, because a lot of your clients might think, well, I just need more employees. I'm just going to scale that way. But a lot of times 10X is easier because you completely change the way you do things in a way that will help you get those better results, rather than let's just do more and more and more and more. And I've seen this within a lot of our students, a lot of agencies, design agencies and such. They're just like, let's hire like crazy. And then it's like, A, the passion's gone. You're just micromanaging people now and trying to make sure relationships still are good. And like, it's just not what the business was once anymore. So anyway, that's an interesting conversation, and I've recommended it.
Yeah, Pat, I've experienced this actually. When I was very young, ran a painting company with a student franchise organization, and I ran my own little small painting company, and I had eight staff, and away we went. After a couple of years, I went and took on a division, Northern Alberta. And I had to not run my own small painting company. I had to hire 20 franchisees, and I had to train 20 franchisees, and I had to get them all operational in their area. And what was normally my fall season finishing up work was spent recruiting. What was normally my winter season spent, you know, booking work was training. And so it was every day and every hour of my day was vastly different than it was even like 1 month prior to making the decision to go from franchisee to franchisor. And until you're forced to look at that, it's easy to just go do more of the same, just more of that, which I wouldn't say I've gotten caught in along the way as I'm growing. It's just like nice, safe little growth, just do more of the same thing, maybe slowly delegate down. But I remember when I was young, I was forced to fundamentally shift my calendar within a month based on that change and going from franchisee to franchisor. But,
mm-hmm. And you saw exponential growth as a result, right?
We literally 10X the business. So yes. Yeah. Okay. Let's get this other concept you have here is persist or pivot. And this is important because it's like, when do you know when to give up and shift? And when should you actually just keep pushing forward? And how do you make that distinction as you're moving into things you've never done before?
Yeah, I mean, this is where if you just kind of are going and coasting and are on automation mode, you can get into trouble, right? Because you just are going down a path without really realizing whether or not this is still the same path you want to go down. A lot of people, like I said earlier, have led to burnout as a result of this. A lot of people have led to then building a business that isn't the one that they ultimately wanted, because they're just kind of in automation mode. They're just kind of growing for growing's sake, versus it's really important to have moments, perhaps throughout the entire year, once per quarter, at least twice per year, to step back a little bit and go, are we going down the path that we want to go down? Are we taking the actions that support that? And when you do that, great. You either reassess and you're like, yes, confirming, let's go, let's keep doing this. Or you start to have to make some decisions on what can continue or what can be removed. I call in the book taking a why-focused introspection, thinking about your why, because your why might change as well. Wi-Fi for short, because if you don't have Wi-Fi, you're lagging. That's the dumb joke. But it's just a matter of assessing whether or not the direction you're going down is something you want to continue. And your goals might change. maybe you haven't seen the results yet, but you continue because you are A, enjoying it, B, you just haven't given yourself enough time yet, and C, you're going to give it another extra period of time to get to a point where then you decide whether or not you want to continue it or move somewhere else. You know, that's where there's an interesting discussion about goals like what really matters here. What can you control within this? For example, recently, about 450 days ago, a little over a year ago, I started a brand new YouTube Shorts channel. So I am a Pokemon YouTube creator on the side. I open Pokemon cards and collect them, and I have a YouTube channel. And I started this separate channel, Shorts channel, purely for the experience of seeing if I could crack an algorithm and kind of see if I can grow there. It was not my face. It's just my voice and my hands opening packs every day. A daily video for 60 days was the goal. Can I get to 60 days? And then I will assess whether or not I want to keep going. Well, the goal was to get to 60 days. By day 30, I only had about 300 to 1,000 views per video. In the grand scheme of things, not doing very well compared to what I've seen a lot of other people do. However, a few things did happen that were very important. Number one, my editing time for these daily videos went down from 45 minutes to 12 minutes. So I was able to 3x how fast I was with editing these videos, where by the end of this experiment, even if I stopped, I would have this new skill now that I didn't have before. Secondly, I had 30 points of data coming in telling me what worked and what didn't. And I started to notice some patterns on what was working. Videos where I was in a Pokemon store and actually interacting with somebody were doing much better than when I wasn't. Well, day 35 came around, and, you know, mind you, old me would have probably, or younger me, would have probably given up. Oh, the views aren't there. Why am I doing this? Well, again, I can't control the views. I can control hitting publish on my videos, though. And day 60, if I got to day 60, that's a win. Well, day 35 comes around. One of those videos hits 750,000 views and just explodes the whole channel. All my older videos start getting viewed. All new videos start getting viewed more. I start to repurpose these videos on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. And today, 440 episodes later, because I have continued it since then, we are now seeing a total of 10 million views per day.
Wow.
Across the board. It is led to so many new opportunities. I got invited by the Detroit Lions to open Pokemon cards on their field at the Vikings game last January. I got now connections with NBA and MLB and UFC fighters who are also into Pokemon who follow the channel. And I've got invited to Japan and have now a relationship with Pokemon as a result of this. Like, that's insane. And something I didn't know anything about, but I gave myself a container of time to do this. And after 60 days was the moment that I would assess based on the data whether or not I should continue or not. And even if I didn't continue that, I wouldn't have ever considered that a failure, because I did what I said I was going to do, and I gained these new skills along the way that I can put elsewhere.
Is there ever a time, and I've seen this with like a business plan, where the goal gets in the way of your why? And so what started as a super aligned thought, which was like, this is why we want to grow the organization, and this is what's so important, and to do that, we need to, you know, get to these numbers. And then suddenly the goal is, it's too much. It's either too much, or you're starting to realize what the goal actually realizes. You realize what it actually takes to do. And you're like, this is not why we set out to do this in the first place.
Yeah. I've seen that a lot in companies that have angel investors and outside investors, mm-hmm. because the goals don't become about the why anymore, about the company and what it's doing and producing. It's we need a return on our dollars.
Yep.
And then therefore the actions that are taking are not necessarily in alignment with what the business was originally started for. So again, this is why it's important to have moments of time to zoom out a little bit and just assess, are our goals the same? And are they in alignment with our why? And are the actions we're taking in alignment with all of that? And performing what I call stop, start, continue exercise is really key. This is what we do in our company as well, where we go, okay, at this moment in time, what should we stop doing? What should we start doing that we aren't? And what should we continue doing based on these goals?
Okay. Got you for a bit more time here. There's another thought that we touched on already, which is this thought of micro mastery versus quantum leaps. We just talked about it when we were talking about 10Xing, but when should I be focused on micro mastery, these like 1-3% incremental increases? And when should I realize, you know what? No, this requires a quantum leap. As a leader of an organization, what are the signs and signals to be giving my energy to one of these two ways of looking? Because they're very different approaches.
They're very different approaches. So micro mastery, I started to learn about early on when I started to really micro focus on small components of my business that led to big growth Because once you kind of learn something and then it becomes a part of your brand or your company or your work method, whatever it might be, that then stacks and stacks and they keep stacking on each other. So for example, when I was learning how to become a public speaker, right, there's a million things that I could do to become a better public speaker, but I would micro-focus, for example, on just the opening hooks of my talks and just micro-master that. I'd watch 100 TED Talks, but I only watch the first minute and see which ones intrigue me and not. I got mentorship and learn about, you know, copywriting and hooks and attention and all this stuff. Then in the next one, I'd do maybe what do I do with my hands? And I started to learn about that and understand that, like, when you make big gestures on stage, it's like amplifying the thing you're saying. But if you want to sort of come into a more vulnerable moment, keep your hands maybe closer to you and smaller. And these things all emphasize the story that you're telling, et cetera. And then that stacks on the next one and the next one, and the next one. And this is how you become world class. I had a friend of mine who is a marathon runner, ultra marathon runner, right? He runs like 50 miles a day. It's stupid. I don't know why. He just loves it. And I called him up one day and he was telling me that there was a camera crew over his house. I was like, oh, cool. Are they like filming a documentary or something like that? And they're like, no, he had a super slow motion camera film how his heel hit the ground.
Right.
So that he could understand just like the balance of forces and all this physics stuff that I didn't know about. And because I was like, why are you doing that? He's like, well, imagine if I get just a little bit of extra energy per step across 50,000 steps, what that would mean for me. And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And so in businesses, for example, if you micromastered your email subject lines, if you just spent 2 weeks to learn everything you could to master your email subject lines, imagine downstream what that would do for you. More people opening your emails, more people then clicking on those links in those emails, which then ultimately leads to more money just simply by micromastering just that one little domino at the beginning of that process, right? Imagine you micromaster sales calls and just learn from the best sales calls people and what that would do for your business, right? There's a million other things you could learn, but let's hyper-focus for a period of time on just this one thing, have it become a part of our sort of ecosystem now, and then move on to the next. I think you should always be having one thing at least that you're always working on micromastering.
In a pipeline in business, so we build these out where you go from like average job size down to number of quotes required, down to number of leads required, and so on. And you're building a sales pipeline.
The funnel.
The funnel. The further down the funnel you are, that 1% change massively impacts that early, say, lead amount you require. You know the math that I'm talking about in this?
Yeah. Like if you work on, like, let's say you have a funnel and you have 100 people going through it. And of the 100 people who come into your funnel on your website, you know, you have 10% of people, you know, on, you know, go to your email list so that you can kind of take them through this process without bringing any more people by simply just 2xing the amount of people who come to your website, who visit and put their email in. You have that much more revenue down the road just by simply changing just that one small thing.
And what I found in this is it's actually the numbers later stages of the sales or marketing process that matter the most. Because if I can go from a $10,000 average job or average ticket to $12,000, right? So I'm selling an upsell or something to bring $2,000 more revenue in, it dramatically decreases the requirement of lead flow versus to double my leads might take a 2x like idea.
Correct.
To kind of move the whole funnel forward. This way, I'm just going 20% up on revenue and it brings down dramatically the amount of leads, like hundreds of leads less. So anyways, just in that idea of just like micro mastery, I always start at the top end, like the end of the funnel, and then I'll work my way backwards because that's where the small percentages, once changed, make a big impact on the early stage of lead gen.
Yeah, I mean, and you could pick the one that maybe is the most exciting or the lowest hanging fruit there in that process to start, because I think just having something always being in that micro mastery lens is going to be key. But on the opposite side, we talked about the quantum leaps. Mm-hmm. Thinking about quantum leaps are great when you feel stuck, when you feel like you're just kind of in the motion and things are kind of coasting and they're really, you know, maybe you're trying these little things here and there to try to grow things, but you really want like a surge. That's where a quantum leap or a bigger sort of risk opportunity can come into play. My favorite being something that in the book I call Power 10. It comes from the language of rowing. I used to row in college. And when you are rowing in a boat with like seven other people, down the river, and you're trying to kind of outpace the boat next to you, It's not just about taking the same strokes with the same energy all the time. The way to get ahead is every once in a while you do what's called a power 10, which is, and the coxswain, the person sort of leading the with the megaphone in the front, or the microphone, they implement this midway through the race a few times strategically. And they say, okay, in the next two strokes, we're going to implement a power 10. And for 10 strokes and 10 strokes alone, you are putting everything into it. And you have this surge and you see the boat just fly past everybody else. Now, the fun part is the other boats are doing the same thing. So there's like psychology there. You can't do a power 100 because you die, right? But you also can't just coast because you get left behind. So every once in a while, doing a power 10, an increased heightened energy moment in your business will help you get to that next level much faster. If you think about like a hackathon, a 24-hour hackathon, you think about coders who just for 24 hours, they got the Red Bulls and the pizzas out. They're building something that they're not able to do in their regular work hours because they are hyper-focused on this for that period of time and they build something incredible. That's where a lot of new software comes is from hackathons because they're all in on that extra energy. And then they go sleep for 2 days after. In the world of podcasting, it might be, hey, I have a weekly podcast, but for the month of October, during this week, it's going to be marketing week on the SPI channel. And every day that week, we'll have a new episode with a world famous marketer who comes in and teaches you a new strategy just for that week and 1 week alone. Yes, it's going to cause me to do a little bit more work for that period of time, but it's not forever. It's just for that week. And now I have more downloads, more subscriptions happening. I create a little giveaway or contest around it to get more downloads and subscribers. And I get to see a, like, I get now a surge that takes me to that next plateau, right? That is what a quantum leap or something like a power 10 can do for you.
For contractors, I see this often in like their annual planning. They'll have this initiative they want to get done that never actually fully gets done. And they're constantly communicating with their team every week to slowly build up that piece. Well, they build it and it never gets done. It's like, guys, lock yourselves in a room. I will see you on Monday. And have this done. It's been taking 6 weeks to get nowhere. And it's like, those are the signs. Like when it's circling and circling and circling and going nowhere.
Love that.
Or I see it in sales. Sales team just gets complacent. They've been selling for whatever, all year. They're tired. And it's just like, we are going to have a whatever, 1 month sprint. And it's just like, here's a whole new paradigm, a little fun campaign around it. What do we have? I'm trying to remember our sales team. We had hot sales summer is what we called it. And we just drove this cool campaign. There's a little bonus around it. And there was new energy versus just the humdrum of the day to day. It shook it up. So
love that.
Cool. Good. Well, Pat, overall, if we want to reach out to you, if you want to read this book, what's some recommendations for us? And then how do we get in touch with you?
Yeah, thank you so much. So the book can be found anywhere books are sold. Yes, it's in Barnes & Noble, but probably Amazon's the best, especially if you like to listen to books. I do go off script on the Audible, too. It's one of my favorite things to do and tell deeper stories about things that are in the book. So the Audible version might be the best for those of you who might be on the job or something and just want something to listen to. That's cool, too. But either one is great. I just thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate this and for allowing me to share this. I love podcasts where there's a specific kind of group of people like your contractors and people who are listening because we can make this very applicable. And your commentary on a lot of what we talked about today is that. So I appreciate you for doing that and for just allowing me to share the message. You know, I didn't need to write this book, but I felt it was the right time for me, not just for my career, but for the world with AI coming and everything just becoming so easily accessible and so much more information coming and a lot of jobs being taken. It is those human specific things and the way that you learn that matter more than versus what you learn. So thank you again for having me on.
You got it, Pat. Thank you for writing it. I appreciate it a ton. It helped me just say, okay, maybe it is okay to say no to all these book recommendations I get all the time and just do one thing well and then focus on the next. So
yeah, it almost recommits you to the things you've already said yes to, which is great. And then you can have more energy going into that. So when people ask me to do something new like that, I say, you know what? I appreciate that because it's allowed me to understand what I opted into that I'm not going to leave behind, that I'm going to recommit to my commitments thanks to these opportunities that are coming to my table that I'm going to say no to.
Awesome. Okay. Have a good day, Pat.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.